Hello and welcome to another virtual author event at the Poison Pen Bookstore. I'm John Charles, and today the Poison Pen is delighted to have with us four of the brightest stars in the cozy mystery firmament, Gabby Allen, Cheryl Holland, Darcy Hannah, and Angela M. Sanders. Before we begin, I would like to let those listening in know that the Poison Pen does have copies of all of our authors' new books, and we would love to hold one or more for you to either pick up at the store, or we can also put them in the mail. Just give us a call at the Poison Pen or go online, and we would be happy to connect you with these authors' terrific summer reading books. And now, without further ado, I'd like to welcome Darcy, Cheryl, Angela, and Gabby.
Thank you.
Hello.
Excited to be here.
We're delighted you could. Let's start first by having each of you tell us a little bit about who you were before you became a published writer. And we'll start with Gabby.
Who I was before I became, a mom. Okay. I worked for a financial institution, found myself very, very bored, and started reading a lot, and decided, you know what, I could probably do this. I did it horribly for a while. And then in 2005, I had my first cozy mystery picked up, which I was unaware you were not supposed to make them sexy. So that series is a little sexier. So I was by a small publishing house. They loved it. A lot of readers have loved it. And then I moved into more traditional once I started publishing with Kensington in 2015. And so this is actually a pen name for me. And so this is my second book under that pen name.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm sure even as we speak, people are racing to buy that racy, cozy mystery.
So it's called Poison Ivy, if you're interested. It's the Ivy Morris Mysteries. They're a lot of fun. But yeah, I was completely unaware that you were not supposed to do sexy things. I have all kinds of stuff. Book two is. So I started out writing romance. So I was not aware that there was a difference in that.
Angela, how about you? You've had a pretty colorful career prior to being an author.
You know, I like to tell people that I've done every job except astronaut. I don't think that one's going to come up for me now. But I started out as, I got a bachelor's in economics, master's in public administration, and started out as a congressional investigator and worked that way for 11 years. But you know, going around to federal, I mean, it was a great job in so many ways. It was so fascinating. And I got to travel all around the world, testify to Congress, but I really wasn't happy sitting in federal government cubicles. And so I jumped on the grease pole to poverty and decided I would start a different career path. So I started doing some freelance writing. I took jobs at nonprofits, and I loved writing magazine articles. I had no desire really to write fiction until I got an idea for a mystery novel. But I thought that wasn't a big deal because I was a professional writer. What would it take me? 3 months tops, I'd have a great mystery novel. Well, okay, so then I figured out that wasn't the case. But anyway, I am now happier than I've ever been writing about witch librarians and their magic cats. So there you go.
Yeah, you've written some wonderful articles on perfume that are just fascinating.
You know about my perfume articles. Yeah, I'm wearing Nocturne by Caron right now, in fact. A strange old perfume and an odd one for a hot summer afternoon, but I saw the little bottle of X-ray and I thought, I'm going to wear it.
There you go. How about you, Cheryl? Who was Cheryl before she was a writer?
Well, I kind of call myself a recovered engineer, and I used to actually be in avionics, and I built flight simulators for Lockheed and the U.S. government all over the world, including England, Wales, Taiwan, Singapore, Australia. And then the one that did me in was India. Because I wasn't visiting, I was working there. So we got to see the underbelly of all of those countries. And even Wales has a not so charming side. But I truly, really enjoyed my job because their engineering devices save lives. And there's nothing more rewarding than that. And they're the biggest toys you've ever seen. I mean, they're 5 stories tall and they move. But, you know, I love to read on these long haul flights, and I usually have 1 or 2 books with me. And on one sad day, I had a book with me that was just awful. I couldn't read it. And here I am, there are 12 more hours to go from LA to Sydney. And even I can't sleep that much. So I took out a pad and paper and I said, I'm going to write my own. This one got published. I can get published. How hard can it be? Well, it is bloody hard. Because it's no trick at all to write a horrible book. It is something else to write a good book. So I got on the path, found Sisters in Crime, and found Mystery Writers of America, you know, learned my lessons, and now this book is number 9 with Kensington. So I couldn't be happier.
That's wonderful. Well, that's awesome. Darcy, I know we're not supposed to have favorites, but since you're a librarian, I would have to say maybe you just edge a little bit above the others. Tell us about your life prior.
I didn't start out actually being a librarian either. I fell into that like writing. I started out thinking I was going to be a doctor. So I went to pre-med and worked in a hospital. Then I worked into graphic arts because it was a little more creative and fun. And then I stayed home. I have 3 sons and I decided to stay home when I had them because they were all 2 years apart. Crazy, crazy busy household. And I think it was around the time I had that 3rd son that I read a lot. You know, that was always my special thing. And I thought, you know, I'll just try writing. And I loved historical fiction. So I kind of started in the historical fiction market. I wrote in that. Again, it's not, publishing is the most, one of the most unforgiving careers. It's as all of us here know, I mean, maybe one of you has had that magic. I send one resume, you know, one thing off and get a response and I have an editor or an agent. For me, I had about 140 rejections on the first novel I wrote, but it was about 1,000 pages and nobody told me that was too long.
Sorry.
Well, James Michener can do it, you know, whatever. So, you know, like we all grew up, I grew up in the era of the big chunky novel and I would buy those big ones because they lasted a long time. I was a slow reader, I had children. So anyhow, I realized that 80 to 100,000 words was a sweet spot for fiction and wrote something and ended up getting it published with Random House. So I had 2 historical fictions done. Here's where my librarian experience comes in. So I thought, yay, I never have to submit to another agent again. I published. I thought I was going to be a historical fiction author. But as my 3rd book was rolling around, they decided to go a different direction. And they, you know, it's a nice, polite way of kicking me to the curb. So my agent at the time was like, well, I can't sell what you write right now in historical fiction. So write a mystery. Like that was easy. I'm like, mystery? I'm not a mystery writer. I don't know the first thing about writing a mystery. So that's when I started working at the library. Uh-huh. My public library, I live in this cute small town and it's an old Carnegie library. It is haunted. I've seen things. No, it's a lovely library. And so I started working there while I was trying to figure out what to do. And I wrote a mystery. And I think Misty, you said that you didn't know you wrote, like, I didn't know I wrote a cozy mystery either. I didn't have quite the sexual, you know, I pushed the limits. But when I wrote it, my agent read it and said, like, this is a cozy mystery. I'm like, oh, cool. Is it cozy? Do you get that cozy feeling? What's a cozy? And that's when I had to re-educate myself on cozy mysteries. So I just recently quit working at the library to concentrate on writing more cozy mysteries. But the first cozy mystery series I wrote was called the Very Cherry Mystery Series. And again, that was supposed to be a 3-book deal. And I was with a publishing house called, and some of you might know it, Midnight Ink. And mm-hmm. I got 2 books into my 3-book deal. I remember writing that 3rd book and my agent called me. I'm like, oh, something great must have happened. Why is my agent calling, you know? And she basically said, don't write that 3rd book. You know, this publisher's closing. You need to do something right now. Try to do something different. or think of something different to write. And that's how I came up with Murder at the Beacon Bake Shop Mystery Series, because I had set that one in Door County, Wisconsin. So I'm kind of from, I grew up around the northwest suburbs of Chicago, vacationed in that town, Door County, Wisconsin. And for some reason, I just didn't know we needed like hooks either. So I actually originally set that one on a golf course, and I had this punny title. I called it like Par for the Corpse. And I thought that was kind of fun, but again, I set it on a golf course and I got a lesson about what a cozy mystery is, and I had to redo some stuff. But anyhow, writing the Beacon Bake Shop series, I was a little smarter. I'd written two books, and this one I knew, like, I'm not going to limit myself to cherry baked goods. I'm going to do a bakery, but I'm going to expand my, and I was actually writing kind of my lighthouse tale at that time. So I decided to set in Michigan, where I now live, and just kind of embrace that beautiful small town lakeside like feeling, and have a bakery and a lighthouse, because who wouldn't want to do that? So that's how, I'm sorry, that's how that all came about.
I love that title, by the way. I have another book coming out in October, and it's called Par for the Hearse.
Oh, I love it.
Because it's set in a funeral home.
I used to write a series for Berkeley Prime Crime about kite shops, and I titled one of mine Go Fly a Corpse. The editor said no, it's too grisly. So it ended up getting called Wuthering Kites.
Oh my gosh, that's so brilliant. See, that's the one thing, like, I didn't know what a cozy mystery really was. I read them. I didn't know, you know, that they were really a specific genre. I love them. And I was so attracted to the covers and those punny titles.
We should have a panel at VoucherCon. Titles our publishers wouldn't use.
I can't be in that panel because they've actually kept every single one of my titles.
I've
never had to change a title before. So, and I have 52 books. So I have quite the record. Hopefully I did not just jinx myself, but yeah.
That is phenomenal. Jeez.
Thanks.
Some of you have had to take a crash course in learning what cozy mysteries are, but now you're all kind of up to speed. How would you define cozy mysteries? What are the key ingredients you think they need to have? And I'll throw it open, whoever wants to start.
Well, let me start then. I think a cozy mystery is, there's a wide, wide bandwidth in what makes a cozy mystery. And I think it really depends on who you're talking to. There is also, because there is some genre snobbery against cozy mysteries, it really does depend on who you talk to. But I would define a cozy mystery as anything from the punny titles and sort of profession-oriented mysteries, right up to the edge of traditional mystery and even into traditional mysteries. The reason I love cozy mysteries is because they are so flexible. They allow for humor. Yeah. I mean, you don't get a lot. I love to read a book where the protagonist realizes just how wacky life is. So they leave a room for humor. There's usually animals and nothing bad happens to them. I really like that. I don't actually like to read a lot of bedroom scenes, but Misty, I will give a little room to your books there.
Actually, so they never actually go in the bedroom. I take you all the way up to the door and then I close it.
Okay, so that sounds pretty good. Sounds pretty cozy. And they're just comforting reads. I know I can pick up a cozy mystery and I can be taken away for something that is gentle and funny and mysterious, something that puts me through, you know, the suspense and love and various emotions, and I leave just feeling good. And to me, that's what a cozy mystery is. That's how it makes me feel.
I'm going to jump in with community, amateur sleuth, give me the justice at the end. I think there are, as you said, the scope is wide and you can do that in a number of ways. But I really think at least most readers that I hear from It's big that they love the community. They want to come back over and over again and see how that grandfather's doing. They want to see how the sleuth is managing whatever it was that she was going through before. They want to see what the best friend is doing and how the dog is doing, or the cat. But I do think that there always needs to be the justice at the end. They have to figure out who it is. And it's a game. For me, it's a game between me and the reader, but it shouldn't be stacked against the reader. Like if they had, I like when at the end they go, "Ooh, man, if I had just paid a little better attention and hadn't been snorting in laughter, I might have been able to figure that out." Because one of the, to me, the big faux pas is don't introduce a character that we've never seen at the end as the villain. Like they have to have been there all along and it needs to make sense. And that's what I often hear is that they love playing the game. I should win it most times, but they at least want a chance that they could have won against me.
I think it's kind of the Agatha Christie effect. When you read her books, the clues are there.
Mm-hmm.
You pick up on them, you feel gratified at how smart you are. But if you miss it, you can always say, well, she did have it there, I just missed it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Barely.
I usually introduce cozies as if Agatha Christie lived in Cabot Cove.
Yeah.
This is what she would write. But I agree with the justice. And the other thing is there's so much more focus on the characters and the relationship of the characters as they go through, you know, this story and, you know, how they grow and how they change. And, you know, I enjoy that. I love getting deep into a world like that. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is I started writing, you know, late-ish. And I wanted both my mother and my granddaughter to be able to read them without me getting embarrassed. So that meant cozy.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think a lot of the readers are attracted to that fact that when they take a cozy, they know that they're not going to have any graphic violence or graphic, you know, sexual scenes, and the murder's not going to be graphic, but it's a puzzle. And I think that's a comfort. So I've gotten thanked a lot for, you know, that, like, thank you for writing a book that, you know, doesn't have a lot of these in it. Because mm-hmm. we've all read books and you know, you're surprised. and the humor. And to me, it's like, I mean, I love watching like kind of sitcoms, you know, because it's that familiarity. So I kind of, you know, writing that series is like visiting your friends again and just you have a different episode. There's going to be a murder. But you know it's going to be solved, and it is clever. It's really fun. People, you know, as the writers, I don't know how the rest of you feel, but you know, you kind of, you know who the killer is. And there's always that part where you're like, are they going to guess this? You know what I think as the writer, because we have so much knowledge behind it, but hopefully it's a good puzzle.
And if they haven't guessed who, the other thing is, can they guess why?
Exactly.
Maybe they have an idea. Oh, it was the, you know, taxi driver, but why? And if you can trick them with that, then.
There you go. I don't always know who the kid is. I have definitely written at least three different books where I had plotted the whole thing out. I knew who it was. I got about three quarters of the way through and I'm like, oh no. Oh no, they just died. That's a problem. And so then I too was surprised at the end. But it made sense.
Yeah.
It actually made more sense than what I had thought the person should have been. So I do try to stay open to that when I'm writing. I don't like to narrow myself into a place where I can't love the cosmic universal soup that kind of gives us some of our ideas. And things just pop out and I'm like, oh, no, we're going with that.
Well, the nice thing about red herrings and laying, you know, this probability that it could be any of several characters, you can change your mind at the end and then just beef up a few of the clues leading to the better villain.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about your new book, the book that brought you here. What can you tell those listening in about it? And we'll start with Misty Gabby, as we like.
So it's called Something Fishy This Way Comes, which is a follow-up to Much Ado About Nauticaling. And the third one will be out next year, and it is called All That Glitters Isn't Old. Basically, Wit has moved from working at the rail yard in Long Beach to Catalina Island off the coast of California. And I absolutely adore this town. Like, I cannot tell you how much I enjoy writing chase scenes with golf carts. it's kind of wrong that I like it that much, but it's a great place. They have buffalo there because somebody did a movie in the 20s and didn't take them back with them. So the buffalo are still on the island. I love that it's like permanent residents on the island itself hover around 3,400, but they have thousands of tourists who come in every day on what they call cattle boats, which is the Catalina Express. And so there's so many possibilities there. So anyway, in this particular book, there are a lot of bird watchers, and something happens to bring a family feud that's been raging for almost 100 years back to the forefront. People who aren't involved in it aren't aware that it's going on. And so there's kind of this figuring out who has the most to gain by this person not being around anymore. And there's a fight going on also with the police station. And so Wit has to kind of figure it out before the coroner comes to town. And it was a lot of fun to write. She has a cat named Whiskers. She lives on the island with her best friend Maribel. And she is an on and on again, off again with Felix, which I'm very much enjoying that too. I do have a romance of sorts in each of my series. This is a little more rom-com than it is just part of the story. And so she drives a glass bottom boat, which is always a lot of fun. And then also has her own like trinket shop. And she provides maps to people so that her grandfather will make these treasure chests and hide them. And so my grandfather actually used to really do that. My cousin was incapable of sitting still for more than 2 seconds. And so that he didn't throw him off the boat, he would make these maps and burn the edges and put it in a bottle and have it wash up to shore. And then they would go on a treasure hunt, and it would keep him entertained for the whole day. So I really loved being able to put that into the book and make it part of the Clue series.
Angela, what about your new Witchy Librarian book? What can you tell us?
Well, it is called Witch and Famous. Yeah, I don't even know if you can see it. And it's the third one in the series. And in this one, so our heroine is Josie Way. The only reason her last name is Way, so it could be the Witch Way Librarian series, by the way. And she has an assistant library, Ross, who writes romance novels as Eliza Chatterley Windsor. And I've been sort of fascinated by the celebrity book club. So I thought maybe there'd be a celebrity book club run by this gorgeous actress. And she decides that Roz's latest, The Whippoorwill Cries Love, is going to be the feature of her monthly televised book club. So she and her posse come to Wilfred, and hijinks and murder ensues. In each of my books, in each of my books, I like to give one magical lesson. Josie learns her magic. Josie is sort of stranded. She finds out she's a witch in the first book when she lands in Wilfred, and she doesn't have any witch mentors. She keeps it hush hush. This is not the kind of witch book where, you know, there's wizards popping up behind every tree. But she has a big chest full of sealed envelopes from her grandma, who wrote these, who's now long dead, but had an idea that Josie's going to need some help. So the lesson she draws from this is about love spells and love magic. And I will say that there's a love potion, and there's a chance that the cat gets into it at some point, but that's all I'll tell you. But I had so much fun writing this. You know, when sometimes when you're writing and you just start cracking yourself up, like, you know? That's how I felt about this book. So I hope people are going to enjoy it.
Cheryl, what's your new book like?
This is the third in the series again. And my protagonist, Miranda Trent, was an artist starving to death in New York City, not able to earn a living at all. And she inherited her uncle's farm down in Eastern Kentucky, and which she just leapt on. But in order to make a living, you know, she's not a farmer. She decided to start cultural tours by taking clients up on these beautiful woodland trails and doing a group painting on the overlooks. And then they would take their paintings back to the farmhouse where she would feed them a traditional Southern meal paired with local moonshine. So the name of her company is, of course, Paint and Shine. And she's been at it a while, and it's doing quite well, but she has a big payment coming up, and she has to pay the taxes before the end of the year, or she loses the farm. And it's Thanksgiving time, so, you know, time is marching on. So she figures out a way she can get a big boost of money is to put on a corporate team building workshop for a local corporation who would be willing to pay her for a 4-day event. And that would solve her cash problem. Unfortunately, she actually has to deal with these corporate people who make New Yorkers look lovely. So I have a lot of corporate experience, and I have been to some of these horrible workshops, and they go one way or the other. They either work wonderfully because the team got along well anyway, or they exacerbate. They're in the team now. So it was a lot of fun to do, and she manages to wrangle these corporate yuhas and but of course, mayhem ensues.
Darcy, as you do.
Darcy, what's new at the bake shop?
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, all of your books sound amazing. I'm cracking up listening to all of you. I think how amazing. Four different authors have such a unique take on cozy mystery. I love it. Cozy mystery. All right. Back at the bake shop, Murder at the Beacon Bake Shop. As you can see, I had a glue gun in some time earlier today, so they had blueberries on there. this is my third also in this series. And this series, like, so the main gist of the series is in the first book you meet my protagonist, Lindsay Bakewell, who is a New York Wall Street investment banker who thinks her life is going amazingly. And she was engaged to a celebrity chef up and coming, who had his own restaurant. And then she finds them one day, it was her birthday, and she finds him in an affair with his pastry chef. So she gets very angry, of course, and goes home and anger bakes some cupcakes because she loves to bake, and her last name is Bakewell. So it's kind of a, you know, she makes fun of her own name because she likes to bake. And then she drinks a bottle of wine and goes a little shopping on the internet. And she realizes that the next morning that she bought a lighthouse in Michigan. And so that got her thinking, and she's like, you know, I need a life change. I need to do this. So she also has a giant Newfoundland dog, and Newfoundlands love water. So the move to the lighthouse is a good thing. And she renovates it, and she opens up her bakery in there. So a lot of high drinks in the first two books, but this one, I knew it was going to be a summer book, and summers in Michigan, we love our blueberries. I don't know. I'm sure every state does, but we have a lot of blueberry festivals. And I really wanted to have this around a blueberry festival. And so I did. And part of the fun for me is like going to small town festivals and kind of doing research. But I wrote this, 2020, 2021, going into there, and all the festivals were canceled. So I had to do a lot of online research. So I created a very fun, which I think is a fun blueberry festival. So the thing is, the town of Beacon Harbor, this is like their annual event. Lindsay is now, she's on the festival committee along with the man she likes, who's a ex-Navy SEAL, Rory, and her crazy friend came in, and she's now running a Kennedy Kapoor. She's fun to write. She's a kind of a fashionista. She has a flat fashion blog. She's an Instagrammer. She does a podcast. So she's in, and she's running a boutique with Lindsay Bickwell's mom now, who is actually an aging 80s supermodel. So she's kind of fun to write to. But anyhow, they're all involved in this event and crowds come to the town. But early on, they begin to realize, like, you know, there's something's going awry, you know. And then pretty soon they realize that there's a prankster in their midst, or a couple pranksters. Somebody's trying to sabotage the festival. And as they're trying to keep up with this, you know, they're trying to head off these pranksters, but the pranks are getting bigger and more crowds are coming. So it's both good and bad. And then eventually, you know, a body shows up. So it's kind of a two-part, you know, like murder mystery, where you've got this thing going on and then you have this body. And was that the prank? Was that the final prank? Or was this just a body? You know, so it's a very, very fun mystery. The pranks were fun to think up. Some of them were actually done. So, but anyhow, it's just basically, you know, just revolves around the bakery. A lot of blueberry baked goods in this book too, and a blueberry festival that just goes awry.
I think the success of a mystery mystery series can depend a lot on the hook or the frame that you choose for it. Can you talk a little bit, each of you, about your particular frame for your current series, why you chose that, and maybe what kinds of research is involved? And I'll throw it open to whoever wants to start. Or I'll pick.
Sure, I'll go. It's very, very simple for me. My parents were born, raised, wed, and are now resting in peace in Wolfe County, Kentucky, in the Adams Family Cemetery. Yes, that's the Adams family. Ba-dum-ba-dum. So I've known this area since I was a child and spent idyllic summers running barefoot through the corn, you know, learning how to feed chickens, milking cows, you know, doing all those wonderful things in an absolutely magical place. I wanted to bring that feeling of warmth and community. And, you know, everybody looks out for everybody all the time back in these Eastern Hills. So when I sat at the book there with that setting, I used my dad's farmhouse. Now, he was born in it and my grandfather built it. It was a Sears ready-made delivered house, you know, where you put it together on the lot. So the numbers are still in the rafters in the attic. So the setting was just no problem at all. And for characters, you know, I've used little bits of some of the locals, and I've been interested in art forever. And my uncle actually did brew one of the best moonshines in that part of the country. So I have to, of course, include that recipe. But it's also a time right now to maybe give them a little love. This is only 20 miles from where the flooding is right now in Eastern Kentucky. And I'm still waiting on word from one uncle, but it doesn't appear that anyone I'm related to, which of course is all of Eastern Kentucky, has died. So it's beautiful, but also, you know, this is typical. It's tragic, and there are lots of deep, dark stories in those hills. And I remember my folks telling me those stories. So they're going to be in the books.
Wow. That is so cool. Well, I guess I'll go, since I'm just like, oh my gosh. First of all, I just had this like crazy conversation with a neighbor about moonshine. And I mean, it's so amazing. Like the nuances of modern moonshine making. So I love it. I think it's so fascinating. And Kentucky, yeah. So mine is that I grew up around Lake Michigan, spent, you know, just all my life around Lake Michigan. And I love that lake. I've seen it from both sides. And I really wanted to set you know, like just a charming town right on the shore of Lake Michigan. And so I do that in Michigan, this side of the lake. And it's set right at the foot of the Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakeshore, which is a really beautiful stretch. I don't know if any of you have all been to Michigan, but it is like this pristine, untouched stretch of just pure sand and sand cliffs. It's the dunes are like, I think, the highest. So it's a very beautiful thing. And the lighthouse, I love lighthouses. I set my first historical fiction in a lighthouse in Scotland. And so it's just kind of a hobby. I don't know why, but I visit a lot of lighthouses. And so I had been up in Michigan in a little town a very charming town, and went to see this lighthouse, and it was the Point Betsy Lighthouse in like a little north of Frankfort, Michigan. And I saw it and I'm like, ooh, I could live there. I was big, it's gorgeous. It's and it sits right at the foot of this Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakeshore. And that just kind of all fell together. The baking is kind of a thing. I love to bake. For me, that was an easy hook. When I was told when I was figuring out what a cozy mystery was, one of the things that my agent was really, you know, she said, well, what you need a hook, what's your hook? And I'm like, what is a hook? What do you mean by hook? You know? And so she was explaining a little bit about it, and she got to food, and I'm like, food? I can do food. I like to eat. I can do that. So I immediately grabbed grabbed onto the baker idea as well. My brother, when we were younger, I think he was in his late 20s and I was in my early 30s. He just like bought a bakery. Like he graduated college and he was in film and video. He was a very creative guy. And one day he's like, hey, there's a baker for sale. And he bought it and he started baking, and he would call me. And my kids were little at the time. And this is when I was thinking about writing, but he'd call me at like, you know, the night before and be like, can you come in at 4 a.m. and like frost wedding cakes? Cause I have like 2 wedding cakes. And, you know, I'm like, I don't know how to frost wedding cakes, but we learned, you know, it was like baptism by fire, but those were such fun memories. It's really hard working in a bakery, especially like in a small town bakery that does everything. And so I think he had the bacon for 2 or 3 years before he was like, yeah, this is nuts. It gave us that foundation to really understand how to run a bakery. And so I run this bakery, my character runs a bakery out of a lighthouse, and it's very enjoyable. And so, you know, I just kind of try to use things like local festivals, stories all the time, like stories of family that kind of seep in there too, but it's just pure fiction and it's fun. And it's just kind of, you know, we all write, I think, to entertain ourselves too. So, but yeah, so mine is really kind of a Lake Michigan lighthouse bakery story.
See, it's you or me.
Oh, framing wise, I really just wanted to be able to go to Catalina and put it on my taxes. So, the other series, I have one series that's set in a small town in Virginia, one series that's set in a small town in Pennsylvania, one series that's set at a junkyard that's filled with objects that have ghosts attached to it and they're all very badly behaved, and one at a Renaissance fair. And so when I was approached about starting a different kind of series, they were like, you know, maybe vacation-y kind of. And I was like, okay, well, I used to live near Lake Arrowhead, and they're like, I'm like, that's a lake. And I thought, you know, that wouldn't be bad. And then it occurred to me that I had vacationed at Catalina a number of times. I love the golf carts, so much. And with the buffalo and the small population, I just started thinking, you know, I could totally take one for the team and go over there and do some research. And so I'm from Pennsylvania. So I flew out to California. I grabbed my aunt, you know, kicking and screaming, I'm sure, to come with me to Catalina, and then spent pretty much the whole day interviewing people who live and work there. And I think the main thing that came out for me was that everybody seemed to have a list of people that they wanted killed, that if I wanted them to send it to me, they would be happy to see that happen. And I was like, all right, so I'm thinking bloodthirsty. I was thinking maybe you need some new people on the island. And it really, the framework of this particular town is different than anything that I've done before, because it's small, because it's a tourist attraction. One of the things that I had to kind of really work with is if it's something that happens to a tourist, how do I keep those people on the island? How do I not let them get on a boat and just, you know, skedaddle? Plus, there are people who anchor out in the harbor. And so it had a lot of possibilities as far as being different from anything that I had written before. And so it really was a thought process in a way that I hadn't really done previously. Other series, it was just like, oh, I love Virginia, I'm going to write a book there. Oh, I love, you know, my little tiny town in Pennsylvania where we drop a wrench for New Year's Eve because we're called Mechanicsburg and we're started by mechanics. And, you know, so that, well, the town next to us drops a pickle because they're called Dillsburg. So I'm just going to be thankful for the wrench and let that go. And I use that in the Tally Graver Mysteries, but they wanted something a little different. And they wanted the rom-com aspect also. And so I aged her down a little bit. I, you know, gave her kind of something more as far as family issues. And so that framework ended up being around something that I hadn't done before. And really, the first books especially required me to make adjustments because it was a little bit different. But the more I sunk into it and the more that I, you know, realized that there's a horse ranch on the top of this island and there's bays and, you know, the Wrigley Mansion is over there. It was so much fun to be able to be able to like make up what I wanted to happen over there, but also have it actually be a place that exists. And, you know, there's an airport that if you don't lift off soon enough, you're falling off a cliff. You can't. And driving a glass bottom boat, it's very different. It's not, not a lot of people do that. So I was able to play with that too.
So I, when it came to writing about a witch librarian, that it wasn't my idea. And I had no intention of writing any books about witches. And I really had not read much in the paranormal cozy world. So my agent called and said, you know, he's always hunting around for ideas. And Kensington was interested in a series that featured a witch librarian and her magic cat who helps her solve murders. And so he asked me what I thought about it. And I said, you know, I'll call you back in a week. And I thought, I'm going to spend this week figuring out how to tell him I'm not interested. But during the week, I just thought, this sounds like so much fun. What am I, crazy? So I came up with an idea for a plot, wrote the proposal, and it was accepted. So the whole witch librarian idea, magic cat, I didn't come up with that. But everything else I could come up with. And of course, when you're writing a book, you're spending time with people in this particular place. So you got to make it fun for you. I wrote a series about a vintage clothing store owner, for instance, and I just had a great time. She was sort of this curmudgeonly aesthete, and that is kind of how I am. So I had a really good time. So in this one, I wanted to, of course, I put the library in an old Victorian mansion. And you know that I haven't really got into them. There is a tower, but there's also some secret rooms. There's one secret hiding place that's been revealed, but there's, you know, there has to be an attic with all kinds of interesting things in it. And I put it in a dying timber town on the edge of the coast mountains and the valley, because I grew up in a rural area in old timber country and with arrowheads you'd find in the dirt after rains. And I just wanted to have that experience too while I was writing. As far as research, I have, I've talked to a few librarians. I know I'm probably getting a ton of stuff wrong, but for instance, there's a cat who lives freely in this library. I don't know how librarians would feel about that, but you know, he is kind of a magic cat, so it's not like he's gonna do anything bad. And then the witch part, I have a consulting witch here in Portland, and she's a fairly respected priestess. She teaches at the local School of Mystery, which is kind of another name for witch school, and truly, in fact, one of the wisest women that I know. And that's a lot of fun talking to a witch. She has, one day she was coming over and she said, I was talking to your spirit guides in the car on the way over. I said, oh, you know, really, what did they have to say? They want you to watch Gone with the Wind. It's like, Gone with the Wind? Why do they want me to watch that? Because they wanted to watch it. So, you know,
they were kind of
in the mood for
that's hilarious.
So, that's how they do the research. But yeah, I've been having a great time with this. And as far as your magic system, there used to be a bookstore here in Portland. That's where I live. This is my cat's tail, by the way. And Bitsy Lamouche. And it sold used books. It's called Next Time Around Bookstore. And as you went up to the second floor, there were sayings carved on the stairs. And one of them was from Alice Hoffman. And she said, books are the only real magic. Mm. And I thought, of course, that's her magic system. It's all about books. She's not going to be able to like wave a wand and say, poof, oh, you're the murderer, you're in jail. But she's going to have a sort of limited magic that comes from the energy that authors and readers put into books. Which is pretty astonishing if you think about it, about what goes into a book. There's just these little black marks on a page and how you can create worlds and feelings and problems and thoughts from it. So that's my story in a nutshell.
I'm actually going to have to jump. I'm really sorry. I am doing a book signing at Bethany Books in Bethany Beach, which is why I'm sitting in my car with my air conditioning on. I did turn the radio off, so you can thank me for that later. But this has been absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for the invite. And I hope that everybody has an amazing evening.
We'll say goodbye to Miss.
So yeah. Good luck. Bye.
Thank you.
My question for those remaining is, you've all written series, mystery series. How do you, when you're approaching a new book, balance the task of writing something that someone who hasn't read the other books in the series can enjoy it with those who are familiar with the previous titles? I guess it's the balancing act you have to play as an author, and I'll let whoever wants to start address that. Or I'll pick someone.
I'll go. The balancing of how to get somebody up to speed if they pick up book three, right? That kind of thing. Yeah, and that's a hard one, you know. I try to, in my first chapter, just do a little bit of a recap. And then I just jump into the story. And I figure that they're going to either, you know, like I think we've all had people who jump into our series, you know, maybe second or third book, and they'll start reading it and they'll go, oh, I want to stop and start at the beginning. If they really are invested in it and they like it a lot, I think that's what they're going to do. So you just give them a little bit, but you don't want to bog it down with, you know, here's what happened last episode. So I think that it's best to just kind of drop in little things and then just jump into your just really fun adventure. And hopefully it'll just carry them along and they'll be so curious, and if they loved it enough, they'll go back and read the rest. So it's a great opportunity, you know, really, to be able to, I appreciate writing a series because I love visiting. I'm sure we all feel the same way about our series. It's like coming home, you know, when we're writing them and behind that screen. So for me, I don't belabor it, just drop little bits in there. So
You know, and I think that I mean, there are certain things you have, like in my books, I made the mistake of having the love interest have some quirky facial stuff, like he frowns when he's happy and he smiles when he's upset. So I feel like I have to explain that every single time. Yes. Why did I do that? But then there are other things, because otherwise someone will totally get the wrong cues off that. But there are other things that I think sometimes readers don't mind knowing certain things. Like I think about how many times I've read Pride and Prejudice. I enjoy it every single time. I know what happens. I know Elizabeth and Darcy end up together, but I still enjoy the ride. So there are certain things that, you know, just simply I do give up. We know that Josie's a witch, for instance. At the beginning of the first book, that's not clear. And about halfway through the book, she finally figures it out. We know that, you know, going through the rest of the books. So I think there are going to be things that I reveal or have revealed in books. So far I've turned in book 4, I'm starting book 5 now. and even though book three just came out, there are things that are revealed. I try not to reveal anything that's going to have to do with the puzzle of the murder, though. Although, you know, I might reveal that there have been murders. But I just have to count on the fact that the reader's going to enjoy it anyway.
I kind of take the approach that each new book is almost an independent story of my characters in a different place. And, you know, like when you meet a new friend, you know, you don't know everything about them on the first 10 minutes. You spend time revealing that. And I try to be judicious about reveals so that it doesn't spoil any of the other books, but enough to entice them to go back and also have a good time in the previous books. So I've been told by Amazon, who of course knows everything, that I have managed that. And it's something I really try hard to do, is to make it a good experience for today's reader and not worry so much about, you know, what am I spoiling, but just make it a really good adventure.
That's good.
Because my own philosophy is you can never have too many good books to read. I'm always interested in learning what others have read and enjoyed. So is there anything on your summer reading list that you'd like to share with others?
Well, I put a big old stack of books right here. Okay. And my to be read pile is, well, it's a series of piles throughout the house. It's really terrible. You know, I'm happy that my office, like here you can really see like waist up and you can't see all the piles of books on the ground. It's really bad. And I'll just point out one thing, because John, you mentioned that I wrote perfume reviews. See that cabinet back there, the Chinese writing? That is totally full of perfume.
Oh, good heavens.
Okay, but that doesn't have to do with reading. I know, good heavens. If there was ever a fire in here, that thing would explode. So I am halfway through Agatha Christie Halloween Party. I love the old ones. I am also about halfway through, because it's like, always good to have a couple of them. Ruth Rendell, I mean, she's such an amazing writer. I mean, gifted at the story, but gifted at characters. She uses the omniscient point of view in a really canny way. You just don't see that very often. This one I just bought yesterday. I've not read any of these books. It's the second one in the series, but I've heard it's a terrific series. Mm-hmm. We got an old John Dixon Carr. I just bought this one yesterday. This one will probably be read through within the week. And Margaret Millar, I stumbled over. Hers are hard to find, but she is such an amazing writer. And then my big splurge in hardback, and I'm kind of saving it, because you know how there's a really good book. It's the, just, you know, I do like the anticipation.
Oh, I love that book. It's so good.
Is it good? Oh, see, I'm going to put it around like on the table where I can just go, oh, it's coming up, you know, that excited feeling. So that's what I've got going. And you're, and listening to you all talk about your books too, you're just going to be adding to my stack. Okay, that's it for me.
Oh my gosh. I love your, first of all, I love your perfume cabinet. I'm so jealous. I don't think I even own a bottle of real perfume.
Oh my.
It's on my to buy list someday.
Oh, I can fix you up. Are you going to VoucherCon? We'll talk. I'll bring you some samples.
What scent should I wear?
I can help you. I can.
It's so confusing. I love it. Perfume.
Yeah.
Angela's an expert. She can.
I can.
I know.
I've been interviewed by the Guardian newspaper. Oh. I read your French perfume magazine.
Oh, that's amazing. I'm going to have to read some articles. That's like how I educate myself. I'll do it. I haven't tried to read a lot of cozy mysteries and things of contemporaries, friends. So I love Krista Davis. So I was just reading her, the Diva Eats Cheesecake. Mm-hmm. I'm reading that. And I have a son getting married in a few days. And so I'm knee deep in wedding stuff. So I'm saving like all the fun books. I just bought a bunch at a little bookstore by us, two dandelions. And so I have a stack, and that's, I couldn't tell you all of the, let's see, Murder at Pennington Manor by Tracy Gardner is on there. So that's, these are the ones that I look at and like, I'll get to them this month.
Their reward, yeah.
Get through the wedding.
I usually also keep two or three going at a time. And I just finished a nice class of Corpse by Simon Brett, because I had discovered I had never read a single one of his. So I fixed that. Wow, he's really good. And I went back to the Old West or Out West, and I'm reading The Tale Teller by Annie Hillerman. Oh. And I just love the Navajo, you know, four corners. It just is so restful, even though, you know, bad things happen. But she really does bring the true West and the Navajo just right off the page. And then I just started the Thursday Murder Club by Richard Osman, because I heard everybody thinks it's fabulous, and they are right. It's fabulous.
Yeah, that's on my pile. That's all I'm doing.
Okay, I do have a couple questions for each of you that are rather unique. Darcy, I had no idea you could buy lighthouses on the internet. That's actually fun. Can you tell us about?
Would you like a lighthouse? I might be able to sell you one. That was one of the things my husband always is looking for, you know, just playing around the internet. And when I was trying to think up, you know, this story, and I was trying to transition from the Cherry Mysteries to something else, and he's like, hey, do you want to buy a lighthouse? There's like 10 for sale. I'm like, yeah, and so I looked at it. Now the lighthouses that are for sale are kind of run down, gonna be honest, but there's a lot of them in Michigan, and what they do is they try to, you know, some they preserve and some they knock down and some they try to sell to people to, you know, do with what they will. You can, there are some that are run as hotels. One is in the middle of, I think it's the Mackinac Straits. And you can go out there with your friend, your family, or your girlfriends, or you can have a party out there. They drop you off with some food. And it's because it's just, there's no property. It's just there on the lake. And you live in it for the weekend and manage it. So it's like the immersive experience. So, but oddly enough, that's kind of how I got the idea that you can buy a lighthouse on the internet.
Cheryl, I also had no idea that you're not just a talented writer, you're also an artist yourself. You do, is it art?
Well, I know it sounds weird, but I am sort of middle-brained in that I have a very strong analytical, well, you know, engineering side, but I also have a very strong creative side. And in my family, that is a big part of being in my family. We're very musical, we're artistic. I didn't know that everybody wasn't like that because, you know, I've always been that way. And so this is the second series that I have brought in. A major part of the book is art. And it makes me feel good. It's a great balance for me. It keeps me nearly sane, I think.
Angela, when I think of people who could be considered life coaches, I think probably the last person on earth I would think of is Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Zsa Zsa Gabor. Okay, so if you sign up for my newsletter, I've got a cat on my lap. I'm going to move him and pull out this book. Zsa Zsa is one of my great informants. See if I can find her. Here it is. One of her, now you guys, I know you think self-help is all about Brené Brown. Let me tell you, here, what you really want is this book, which is called How to Catch a Man, How to Keep a Man, How to Get Rid of a Man by Zsa Zsa Gabor. It's printed on powder blue paper.
That's amazing.
Yeah, in my newsletters, I like to add little bits from her. She tells you, like, men of the world, you know, pick a nationality. She'll give you the bottom line on it. You know, she, you know, if the, like, one of her sayings from the book is, if the woman of the family wears the pants, the mistress wears the minx.
Ooh.
A little hot tip from Zsa Zsa there.
She's on to something.
Her autobiography is pretty good too. But
I bet that's hilarious. Oh my gosh, I got to read it now.
Yeah, it's good. If you can find it, it's good.
We do have a question from one of your many fans out there. They would like each of you to answer, if you could be one of your characters for a day, which one would you choose?
Well, I mean, I'd have to go with the witch. Because Wendy didn't get a chance to do that. I mean, Josie, in some ways, she has the most moderate personality, so she couldn't really do, she's not wild, but she's a witch. She can go into the body of her cat. I gotta do that.
I would like to be my main character, Miranda Trent. I mean, she's young, she's energetic, she's got energy, she's a, you know, incredibly talented artist. And her ranger boyfriend is quite good to look at.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great question. I would probably pick my protagonist, Lindsay Bakewell's best friend, because I feel like Lindsay and I have a lot in common. We bake a lot. We both like lighthouses. But Kennedy is her best friend, and she's just the polar opposite, and she can say whatever she wants, do whatever she wants, in a charming way. But I always, I'm probably too polite to say the things that Kennedy would say. So I think it'd be a hoot to, you know, be that person, blog a little bit, or, you know, have a host a podcast, wear some fancy clothes, maybe some good perfume.
There you go. I can't believe how quickly our time has flown by. Before we run out of time, can each of you remind us again what your new book is, how readers can learn more about you, whether you have websites or on social media platforms? We'll start with you, Darcy.
So my newest book is Murder at the Blueberry Festival. Very summary reads. And you can learn more about me. I have a website at www.darcyhanna.com, and I'm on Facebook and Instagram. So find me there.
Cheryl?
My latest book is Death of Sketch. And you can find me at Facebook and Instagram. I only post occasionally on Twitter. My website is www.cherylhollon.com.
And Angela.
Yeah, so website is Angela M, M as in Marie, AngelaMSanders.com. And I'm on Facebook, but I never go on Facebook because it's always political arguments and people's dogs dying right and left. Pray for my beagle, who was like, and I just can't take it anymore. So I switched over to Instagram. It is. It's horrible. So I switched over to Instagram. So I'm mostly at Instagram, Angela.M.Sanders. I got there too late to snag up the Angela M. Sanders, but I would love to follow you. And then Witch and Famous is the latest book. It's pink. Mm-hmm. And I hope that you will enjoy it.
Angela has a fabulous newsletter, so do go to her website.
Oh, I hope that you'll say, thank you, John. That's so nice. And you get some Zsa Zsa.
Yeah.
And some Edith Head. Those are my two favorites.
Well, that's been the quickest hour I've ever experienced. I'd like to thank those authors who are with us today, Darcy Hanna, Cheryl Holland, Angela M. Sanders, and Gabby Allen, who was here but had another appointment. I'd like to thank those listening in to another virtual author event at the Poison Pen, and remind you, we do have copies of the author's books. Please do feel free to give us a visit or go online. We'll be happy to connect you with these authors' wonderful books or suggest others you might enjoy. And thank you all for tuning in. Thank you, authors, for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for having us. It was wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay, in case I lose you as I click on buttons, thank you, ladies. You were all terrific. Wonderful books, wonderful conversation. Well, I appreciate you taking time.
Thank you for inviting me and inviting us. It was a total pleasure.
Please do. If you're ever in the area, we'd love to have you stop by or do a program or come back virtually. And I'll look forward to your next book.
Oh, that would be wonderful. I know. Get out there someday. Thank you, honestly. Thank you so much. It was so much fun. It was so much fun talking to you ladies. Oh my goodness.
So are any of you going to be at VoucherCon?
See you at VoucherCon. See you at VoucherCon. All right,
I'm not going there this year, but I will go to Mouse Domestic. Do you guys do that one?
Not that much.
Oh, darn it.
I know.
All right. Well, I'll get out to VoucherCon next time. 2023. Woo!
All right.
Bye. Thank you so much, guys. Bye. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Bye.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.